Everyone has a story to tell. What's yours? You're listening to Around the World with Dan Perry. Do you enjoy hearing tales of world adventure? Would you like travel advice from those who know the road well? Maybe you want to embark on a journey of your own, and you just need a bit of motivation to get started. You'll find all of that and more on Around the World with Dan Perry.
Hey everyone, my guest today, MCK, has just left the building, and wow, we had an awesome conversation. It went really long, so I'm going to keep this introduction short. MCK has a program that he calls Bounce, and I wasn't quite sure what it is, so at the beginning of our talk for this podcast, we did a bounce of our own. Basically, it's a 20-minute discussion where he listens to you and he asks you really good questions to try to help you work through whatever problems you have or whatever's on your mind, really, in your life. I think you'll get a good feel for it by listening to our bounce. And as a special offer, MCK is going to give you, if you are interested, your own bounce for 20 minutes, and you can pay whatever you want to pay him. All you have to do is go to mck123.com/1000. That's mck123.com/1000. And he'll set you up with a bounce. Now, you've only got 1 week to do this from the day that this podcast is released. So if you are interested, get out there and do it right now. You definitely won't regret it. It was really awesome for me, even just to work through my little issue that I had with my podcast. And for now, let's jump into my conversation with MCK. Tell me what bounce means.
So bounce is basically it's a 20-minute conversation between a stranger, between two strangers, or it could be two people that know each other but pretend to be strangers. And the idea, basically what I want to do, like my big goal, is someday you'll be able to pull out your phone, hit a button, and get connected to a great listener who asks good questions.
Okay.
So that after a 20-minute conversation, you can get more clarity about something that you're thinking about or something on your mind, and you can get to that next step.
So almost like a therapy session, a short one on a phone?
A little bit, yeah. Because I think therapy, I think, is something that is not so comfortable for a lot of people. And also, I don't think you need to be a therapist to be a good listener or to ask good questions. You know, like, you don't have to be an expert to be empathetic, or you don't have to have, like, a PhD to be patient. It's like, if you just have, like, this time that you spend with somebody, or taking this time that you carve out for yourself, too, where somebody is just, you know, reflecting some ideas, like, hey, this is what I heard, this is what I noticed, this is what I'm wondering about, and how that can help you. But I think also help them too, because when I've found that over a couple hundred of these conversations, just like testing out this idea, that I learn a ton when I'm just listening to you. So it's a little bit weird, I think, being on like the other side, where like you're the main question person, because I really enjoy that and I like being on that side. And I think it's helped me a lot in so many ways that, questions are always more fun, I guess, for me.
Yeah, it doesn't have to go that way. I kind of think of this more as like co-hosts almost, this podcast. I'm not so interested in just like interview style, like tell me about this, then tell me about this. And I don't know, I just want to have a talk. Mm. And so that's where I think your bounce idea is really interesting, because we kind of intersect a lot. Maybe not exactly, like mine's more travel-based, yours more like life-based. Mm. But I think that our ideas have a lot in common. Maybe the length is a little different too. I tend to go pretty long on these, and I haven't quite figured out what the ideal length is, but I don't know, just loving doing it.
Yeah.
So how do we do this? You just, let me start talking.
Yeah. So here's what's going to happen. So it's a bit of a framework. So basically 20-minute conversation. The first minute you'll just introduce your situation. So, you know, prior to this chat, you know, I shared some questions with you to help you start thinking about a communication situation that might be challenging. So if we want to talk about something like that, that'd be awesome. So you basically take 1 minute to just share something like that, or anything that's on your mind right now that you kind of like to work through or think through or like get to a next step with.
Wow, that's a big question, but let's try it.
So you can take a minute to
think about it. No, let's just start. I'm thinking about this podcast right now since we're recording.
So let's
go ahead.
So what's going to happen is we'll do a minute. You'll share with me what you're thinking about.
Okay.
And then the next 9 minutes, I'll just ask questions based on what I hear, what I notice, and what I'm wondering about.
Sure.
And then at 10 minutes, we'll sort of take a mini pause and we'll just check in. How are we doing? How are you feeling? How's this going? And then decide sort of how to take the next 10 minutes from there. Ultimately, at about 20 minutes, then getting to the, all right, so what's next? Like, what do you want to do next?
Okay.
Yeah?
We'll do it.
All right. So ready, set?
Okay.
So, what's on your mind?
Okay, I'm thinking about the podcast and where to take it next. And, like, let me just tell you about how I got started first.
You don't need to tell me how you got started. Just you're thinking about taking it next. Okay.
Okay. Okay, so fine. So where we're at now is I really enjoy recording it, and it's been awesome. I'm meeting a lot of really cool, interesting people. I want to keep it going, make it like a weekly show, and put it out there. So I think it'll be entertaining for people to listen to, any like a broader audience, people looking for travel advice, people just want entertainment in their lives. Now, I guess the thing I'm wondering to myself is, is this something that it doesn't matter if anyone listens? Because right now I don't have a big audience. Mm-hmm. I'd love to build an audience. Does it matter if my audience stays small and whatever? I just still enjoy it. And I think for now the answer is yes. Maybe you can help me with this. But there's this weird thing where if I had just invited you over, mm-hmm. and said, hey, let's just chat. Well, maybe you would still be up for it. But most people probably wouldn't be. Yeah. Like, they'd just go, what? You just want to talk to me? And, like, we don't know each other. Or maybe we are friends, but, like, it's just a weird question. Mm-hmm. But if I say, well, let's just chat, and then I'll record it and put it online for everybody in the world to hear, then they're like, oh, yeah, let's do it. And I guess a lot has changed in the world, you know, with smartphones, with technology, but I still think conversations are very important to me, even in the modern age with everything else going on, and I want to preserve that in a way. So that's very important to me. So I guess I've been kind of rambling, but the question is that I'm really wondering is this something that I can push to the next level with a bigger audience, or is it worth continuing to do with a small audience, even if I don't grow it? Mm-hmm. And what would you think about that?
Oh, so it sounds like you already answered your question. What's the problem?
Yeah, it kind of does. Yeah. There's this thing that happens, like I'm also a software engineer, mm-hmm. and there's this weird phenomenon that happens where if I have a question for, like about some code I'm working on, and I go online to ask people online, like, what should I do here? I need to figure out how to phrase the question. And in doing so, quite often, I answer my question. Like, I figure it out just by trying to figure out how to ask the question. Now, I don't even need to ask it anymore because it's already answered. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what just happened here.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think you're right. I think it's going to keep going. And it's whatever. If no one listens, who cares?
Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, is there anything else about this that you want to explore, though? Like, how could more of this be? How could the rest of the time that we have be helpful to you to think through this?
Through the podcast?
Yeah.
Or whatever's on my mind?
Well, just podcast specific. I mean, staying on this topic, you know, what other unresolved questions do you have about the podcast?
Well, I think I'm getting pretty good. Like, I guess the big thing on my mind now is time. And the recording of it is no problem. Like, that's the fun part. It's after that, putting it all together, that's where it gets hard. And I'm wondering if I'm spending too much time, especially on the show notes and on like looking things up that we talked about, because I go down some really weird rabbit holes sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I'll have to like dig through the internet to like find answers to things that were on my mind during the show, mm-hmm. which I'm wondering if that's worthwhile to me, or if I should just put it out there, throw in a few words, spend half an hour on it, like other than the recording part, and then call it good. I'm not quite sure now, right, at this point.
So what's the average amount of time that you spend putting together the show notes and the after sort of post-production?
Well, let's see. I always listen to the whole thing once. So however much time it takes to record it, double that.
Yep.
And then I write down anything that's interesting that we talked about that I might want to look up. And then I have to do some photo processing, but I can do that while we're listening. So after that re-listening part, I'd say maybe 3 more hours I'm at right now. So if we do like an hour long show, it takes an hour to record it, an hour to re-listen to it, and then 3 more hours to put it together, so 5 hours. Mm-hmm. And I'm, I guess I'm just wondering if I should cut that 3 hours down to like half an hour or something.
Mm-hmm. And why not just try?
Yeah, maybe I will with ours and see how that goes.
Ooh, ouch.
Cut out. Oh, actually that did. Yeah, no, that did kind of sound bad.
But no, I mean, that sounds interesting. So what if you tried that? Or another thing that I'm wondering about is, what is the added value to your life that that extra 3 hours is giving to you?
Ah, good question.
That you might not be accounting for right now.
Good question. Yeah, it takes away from time that I can do other stuff. And right now that other stuff is finishing my book that I'm working on. Mm-hmm. And so I'm thinking maybe this is becoming like a almost a distraction, that I know I have to finish this book because I just don't have a lot of time left. And writing, I don't know if you've ever tried to write a book. Yeah. Boy, it's, they say that that authors have like the cleanest shoes you'd ever imagine and like the cleanest apartments because they will do anything to avoid writing. Mm-hmm. And that's so true. Like it's really a procrastinator's sport or hobby. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if maybe I'm just using this extra time as an excuse then to procrastinate from some other stuff that would be potentially more important or more valuable to me long term.
Mm-hmm. Is the extra 3 hours a distraction, or is just the podcast a distraction?
Oh, I guess you could say the whole thing would be, but I mean, it's all about like everybody gets the same amount of time in a day. It's just how we use it. Mm-hmm. And I really think the podcast is valuable to me because I really enjoy recording it. So mm-hmm. You might call it a distraction. Some people might. I might even call it that, but I don't want to cut it out. I just think it's too cool to do.
Well, so not that you have to stop it forever.
Yeah.
I mean, how long do you anticipate the book taking to finish?
I need to get it done in about 3 more months. Out the door in 3 months. Mm-hmm. And so I'm on my final editing stages. I've got some more writing to do, but there's just, I've written one book already, so I kind of have an idea of how much work there is of putting it all together. Mm-hmm. It's a lot. So I think I'm cutting it close already. Mm-hmm. I think it's still possible to do. And I'm a bit of a perfectionist. No, I'm a massive perfectionist. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to put out a book that kind of sucks or is less than what it could be. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to get it like as polished as possible. Mm-hmm.
And is there a way that, I mean, I'm thinking in two directions right now. One is there a way for you just to cut that down from 3 months to less so that you could only focus on the book and then get back to the podcast later? Or let's try that first.
You know what? I totally could. I could easily just stop doing the podcast for now and come back to it later. And I plan to do that. I plan to do it later. I plan to travel next year for a year. Mm-hmm. And during that time, I know I'm going to meet a lot of interesting people, and that's kind of how this podcast got started. Mm-hmm. I just kept meeting more and more interesting people and having like really long conversations about the most random things and just wishing that I had recorded them. Mm-hmm. And then I just started recording them. That's kind of how it got going. So I know that's going to happen in the next year. The question is, between now and summer, do I want it to continue happening? And I think a big part of it now is that I'm kind of wrapping up my time in China. I've been here almost 3 years. I've met a lot of people, made a lot of interesting friends. And some people I'm doing this podcast with, such as yourself, we just met. Mm-hmm. That's happened a couple times lately. Other people are people I know quite well and like really close friends. Mm-hmm. And I actually find it very valuable to have that, just even if it's just an hour of talking to each other on tape for later. Like someday, I don't know, someday years from now, it'd be cool to listen to it again. Mm-hmm. Just see how that conversation went and remember the good times. And if I stop doing it now, I'm just going to lose that. So I won't ever be able to do that. And that's already happened to me with so many other people that I kind of don't want that to happen here. Mm-hmm. That's kind of the issue.
Yeah, totally fair. So we're coming up at about 10 minutes now. Mm. How do you feel? How is this going?
Good, good. Yeah, you're obviously a good listener. You're asking good questions. Mm. And I think I think it's kind of what I was saying at first. Like you're, I feel that you are helping me. You're almost like my brain. You're an extension of my brain, helping me hash this stuff out. Like I kind of explained with the code writing questions. Like you're just getting me to focus on the right parts that I need to in order to come up with an answer for myself. Mm-hmm. So thank you for that.
Of course. Is there a moment or a question you feel like in our conversation so far that's been particularly helpful or particularly useful?
Well, the whole thing's been helpful, but especially the beginning of it where we were talking about, like, is it worth doing this podcast? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was the most helpful.
Cool. So, I mean, it seems like things are relatively clear now. Mm-hmm. The podcast is important. You want to keep doing it. You know, there's a lot of value for you. I'll come back to this question. Are there things that we haven't yet talked about? Or is there any question that maybe I didn't know to ask related to this topic that I should have asked?
No, I think you've covered the... I mean, this is a very high-level overview of it. And obviously, we just met, so there's so many other things we could talk about. But mm-hmm. I think you've covered the big stuff, the big mm-hmm. the big picture questions.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. So I guess the last question is, what's the next step?
What's the next step? So I think keep doing it mm-hmm. and try to cut down on the extra time that I spend. Really just try to put it out. One thing that I just thought of now is I'm trying to battle against my perfectionism with this podcast mm-hmm. that I feel that I can't do that with a book, because a book, it has like higher value to me, and I want it to be, okay, maybe perfect is not the right word, but I want it to be as good as it can be, as I can possibly do. Mm-hmm. There's no perfect book. The podcast, I'm putting out weekly. So if there's like some little problems with it, I'm caring less and less as time goes on, that there's some little issue in the middle of it, a weird, awkward pause, or I say something that sounds bizarre. Mm. So I'm going to try to cut that out. Cut down on that extra time that I spend. I'm going to get a new show out with spending as little time as possible on it, but still enjoy that time that I highly value, which is the recording part, and not rush through that or anything. Just still keep that in place.
Sounds great. So thank you for being so open and honest and for sharing your situation with me.
No, thanks for helping. Dude, yeah, now that I kind of see what you're doing, it's really helpful.
That's the thing. So yeah, 12 minutes. I mean, not every conversation will take 20 minutes. Yeah. A lot of them do. Most mm-hmm. of them do. But yeah, I mean, it's just a way that I think people can take a small amount of time out from whatever they're doing or whatever they're thinking about mm-hmm. to think about something in hopefully a different way based on that person who can be with them through that process.
Yeah, and do you normally bounce online, or is this a phone call thing?
Yeah, so usually I do it, I use Zoom. Do it over Zoom.
Zoom, is that a, oh, it's the recorder.
Like Skype.
Ah, okay.
But it's, it's super good. You know, it's really nice. You could do, I mean, I use it for video conference calls as well, but in this situation, it's more to, just to be able to connect with somebody that they can call in from a phone line if they want to. They can't do that in every country around the world, but they can do it in quite a few of those. And then otherwise, it's just a link. So as long as you have an internet connection, you can, you know, we can link up and have this kind of call. And try to help people move through whatever's going on.
Yeah, that sounds really cool. That actually kind of brings up another thing related to what we were talking about. Just one final thing is whether or not I should do this show through Skype. And I'm kind of open to it, I guess, but I would like to, if possible, keep doing it in person. Mm-hmm. There's just something about it. Like, we can just sit here and look each other in the eye, you know, and like mm-hmm. really feed off of each other and like our body language. And that's just doesn't seem as easy to do online. Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I mean, I think there's a little bit of probably extra nuance with that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I started this just doing it in person.
Yeah,
I didn't start doing it online. I started doing it with, because I don't think most people want to call up like some random person and be like, who's going to be on the other side? How do I know this person's going to be a good listener? How do I know that they're going to ask me good questions? Like,
yes,
there's no way to trust that.
Right.
So I just started with people that were friends of mine, and I would ask them if they want to bounce with me, which in the beginning it was a 10-minute conversation.
Okay.
Just sort of like that first part. But after I started learning a bunch of stuff about that and what was working well and what wasn't working well, all of a sudden it was like, oh, it's more of a 20-minute conversation. Because I realized the after part, which we didn't really go too much into, because you kind of, I think, were able to move very quickly through kind of what was going on with you.
Yeah.
But a lot of times that after part of, you know, sort of, it was just feedback. I just wanted to know how people thought about it. And I realized that the feedback was just as important, if not even more important, than what we talked about at the very beginning.
Yeah, agreed. Agreed. And also, we didn't, like, my whole thing with my podcast, that's mm-hmm. not, like, groundbreaking stuff or, earth-shattering, like, drama or anything. It's, you know, which I don't know if you get any of that, but...
Well, I think that's actually the misconception.
Okay.
The misconception is, and this is actually where you were beginning, which is why I encourage you just to do a little bit, not the whole... I don't need to know the whole story of your life mm-hmm. to be able to help you move through your next step.
Yeah.
And I think when the 10-minute became the 20-minute, and when I went from just letting people talk about their situation, whatever was on their mind, to keep it to a minute. You went for 2 minutes, by the way.
Oh, okay.
Is because I found that, you know, between sort of like a minute and 2 minutes is kind of like the sweet spot for where we could really make some progress. Because if you just go on for 4 or 5 minutes, I'm a good listener. If you're talking to the average person, they're probably already snoozing.
Yeah.
Because there's something about a dynamic conversation that I think really comes alive. Like our conversation right now, you know, this back and forth, I'm sharing a little bit, you're sharing a little bit, we're both like there and we're both invested. And as soon as you start telling those like longer stories, kind of like...
Yeah. You got to be a really good storyteller to keep people's interest. That's
absolutely.
For sure.
And it's hard to know what question to ask after that.
Yes.
Because your mind works, I think I read something, like your mind works about 5 times faster than you speak. Something crazy like that.
It makes sense, yeah.
So by the time that you've told your 5-minute story, I have no idea what question I want to ask because I already have like a bunch of questions. Or, you know, I've already fallen asleep because I kind of got lulled into, you know, whatever you were saying or your voice. And all of a sudden I was thinking about this other thing that was on my mind, even though my intention was to be listening to you.
Yeah, it's a tough one, staying focused for that long. And the... after 2 minutes, I imagine a lot of people are rambling too, including myself. I probably was there.
Well, but again, I think coming back to and saying, like, okay, cool, like, so where do we want to move from here and how can we do that? And I think the value of the 10-minute pause is that it's how are we doing? You know, are we there? Do we still need somewhere to go? What have we accomplished so far? You know, what of that is important? And maybe we still have a little bit of time to flesh some other things out.
Great. So now with your clients, is this a one-time thing or do you do follow-ups, like regular, do you speak to them regularly? How's that work?
So my real goal actually is not to be about me. It's about letting anybody have the opportunity to hit a button and talk to somebody like this.
Oh, okay. So you'll ideally attract other people who are listeners too. Oh, got it.
So calling bouncers and sounders. Okay. So you were the bouncer, I was the sounder. And yeah, just having a community of great listeners who ask good questions, which I think of as sounders, I guess, in this language. And people who bounce, they can be sounders too. People who sound, they can be bouncers. I mean, I think we all have situations that are going on in our lives that we can use some help with. And sometimes it's just that person who can be a good listener asking good questions. So yeah, someday I would like it to be a much...
Okay, so you want to set up a big,
just me.
Okay, a big network. Well, right now I've gone to your website and I've looked mm-hmm. it over, and so I had an okay idea of what you were up to, but mm-hmm. I think this really helped to show what it was. Mm-hmm. So I will definitely share this with friends or anyone who might be interested.
Cool.
But what is your website? Let's just get that out there so people can look it up.
MCK123 is sort of like the epicenter of everything that I'm doing. ShallWeBounce.com is sort of like the bounce dedicated site, but right now what I've realized is I think that the idea is a little bit hard for people to wrap their head around, just like you said. You kind of got a little bit of going to the website, so I think I'm focusing on MCK123, people who know me, people who trust me, people who have, you know, who I get to meet and think like, oh wow, this is kind of cool, or people who have bounced in the past. Being able to continue that conversation with them, seeing how they may want to join or get involved in some way, and then continuing along that path. So
sounds good. Do you have ideas for like making an app for this?
I'd love to.
This sounds like a great app. Mm-hmm. Like you hit a button, you could just have like two buttons, like bounce or what was the other one? Sound?
Sounder, yep.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, maybe to be a sounder, you need to go through some vetting process, but mm-hmm. yeah, just hit like one button, bounce, and then it calls out to any sounder out there.
So, I mean, I think the technical challenges are low.
Yes.
Yeah. This strikes me as being a very simple thing.
Yeah.
I think the complicated thing is people who actually want to be great listeners who ask good questions.
Yeah.
The people who want to be sort of on the other side of that, and also making sure that, because that's a question I get all the time. How can you guarantee this person is going to be a great listener and ask good questions? Mm-hmm. I get that question all the time. And I think the way that I'm trying to do it now, both to make sure that I can keep that promise and I can also be financially sustainable, is by doing these month-long conversation events, communication events, where people who are right now feeling they have communication challenges and they want to work through those challenges, can work with me on this month-long thing that I've designed to take them through certain fundamentals while at the same time very focused and lasered in on what they want to improve on. So it's things like how to be a better marketer of yourself without being annoying or coming off too strong, or you know, things like that. It, actually, you know, a lot of it comes down to is how can you be a better version of yourself in your own skin?
Got it. Okay.
Because I think what I've learned from a lot of the conversations that I've had, and even the 5-minute survey that I shared with you, is these people are feeling misunderstood. People are feeling like they can't be themselves. I think those are probably two of the biggest things that people are feeling the most.
Yeah, that's a human condition for sure.
And I just want to be able to do something in a thoughtful way that, because last year I did this awesome thing that was designed by Seth Godin and his team called the Alt MBA. And I really, really loved this thing. It was great. And it made me think so differently about a few things in my life, the first being generosity. And I think that over and over, this idea of being generous came up in some of the exercises that we're doing, some of the projects that we're working on, in these small groups that we were doing our stuff with. And I got to thinking, you know, I want to do something like that related to communication and connection. Because I think that that, for me, is the most important thing in my life. And that's really why I wanted to do something like Bounce. I had a majorly failed relationship. And as a result of that, I went from thinking, okay, I'm this great communicator. You know, I can talk to anybody, have great conversations. You know, because I've been on the road for a decade at that point. You know, kind of like you, and you know, kind of with something like this podcast, like loving being on the road with people, loving the conversations you're having, and just wanting more of that. Yeah. And comparing that with this failed relationship that I had, and being like, why can I talk to anybody except the person that I'm supposed to be closest to?
Okay, right.
And you're like, where is the link? How is that connected? And that was just, that was like the biggest question I started asking myself.
Yeah.
And at the same time, I used to work in Yunnan. I worked at a hotel for a couple of years. And my buddy, who convinced me that was a good idea to do that, a 3-month project, which ended up becoming a 2-year and 3-month project.
That's how things go.
Yeah. How things go. And which was really cool about listening to a couple of your episodes, like you and Katie going through Yunnan. Going through Dali.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Because I worked at this place called the Linden Center.
The Linden Center?
Which is 25 kilometers north of Dali Old Town in a village called Shijo. And,
south of Shashi?
South of Shashi, okay. Yeah. And it's funny, too, when you were going on that expedition, you went through Lientia.
Yeah, yes.
I had also been through that very unscenic town.
yeah, the towns are, but the area around is so beautiful.
Oh, absolutely.
That valley?
Yeah.
Oh, it's fantastic.
And I think so my buddy Vinny was always talking about this idea of traveling without traveling. And one of his experiences, I think, being at the Linden Center and what we were doing is we were kind of traveling without traveling. Because so many people around us were traveling. And so many people were coming to our place, Chinese people from all over China, foreigners from all over the world. So it was really cool and interesting and dynamic. And every day, like, this was my job, hanging out, having a good time with people, sharing a bit about the local community, because what we wanted to do is we wanted to create this situation where people could experience a community in a way that they couldn't otherwise experience without us. They wouldn't maybe think to go to that small village in that small corner of southwest China in Yunnan. They wouldn't have the opportunity to engage with our friends in the village in ways that we do on a regular basis. And maybe giving them insight into something that they hadn't seen before. Huh. So loving that, I just wanted more of that in my life. And like you, people on planes and trains and automobiles and in places that you would stay on the road and having these amazing conversations, I wanted to know how I could do that not doing that. Because you can't always travel, can't right. always spend 1,000 days on the road or a year on the road or like do these kind of cool things, which I think is really awesome and inspiring about what you're doing. So if you can't do that, then how can you get a piece of that? Or how can you keep getting that realness? Like you've been on a in a situation with somebody where they're opening up to you about something that's so important in their life. Mm. And part of you is like, why are you talking to me about this? Right. And the other part of you is like, you are showing me a window into your life that very few people maybe have an opportunity to see, and I am lucky, and that is a gift. Oh. So that's
so you're thinking of something similar for yourself too.
I just think about that with Bounce. Like I think that is maybe the happy medium. So like the question that you were asking is, you know, this question of time. You know, how can you control the time a little bit better?
Yep.
And I think people do sometimes blab. You know, they want to tell you their whole life story as opposed to like the particular thing. So if I wanted to set up something where people could how do you get to the point?
Right.
Let's just be real, man. We only have a little bit of time.
Yeah.
So let's just talk about what's going on.
Yeah, that's, and boy, that's, I don't know how to do that, but that's, if you can get that out of people early on, and I think maybe you can. Your first question that you asked me was good. It really got me to focus on just one thing. And even, I think you even said something like, I don't need to know your life story or something like that. And we just met or whatever. That really helped me to just hone in on that one issue.
Because you did, what's the right word? You profiled me in exactly the right way. As in, yeah, I am the guy who's going to come over and just meet you because you're probably an interesting person. Huh. And because Nina's like, oh, hey, this cool guy is like doing this thing. I should go meet him and talk to him. I would come over for tea or water or whatever and hopefully have a great conversation because I enjoy that too. I love having people over to my house. I love making lunch. I love making tea. I love making dinner and having these real, longer, extended conversations.
I should have offered you tea. I offered you coffee.
No. Water is good. Water is good. So knowing that I'm that kind of person, knowing that I wanted to do something in my professional life where I could do something that I really love and that I really care about, I think that's what it came down to, this communication stuff. You know, if I had been in a better situation coming away from that 3.5-year relationship, like maybe you can't not be devastated when something happens when you don't expect it to happen in the way that's you think it's gonna happen. But I did all this writing and I did all this reflecting and I did all this thinking. And because I took that time and that space, I guess I just wish that I could have had a couple of other people that I could go through that process with.
Right. Yeah, and we haven't gotten there. We probably won't, but that's a long time to be with someone and have it fall apart. That's mm-hmm. got to be painful. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the time, all you need is like a shoulder to lean on or someone to talk to.
Well, you know, too, I'd had shoulders to lean on.
Yeah.
And I think the conclusion that I came from a lot of this thinking about it is that I was a massive complainer about my relationship. I was always, with the people that I was closest to, I was always telling them what was wrong. I felt like those few people were the only people that I could really be true about my emotions with and the challenges that I felt like I was going through. And instead of being able to share about the goodness that I had in this relationship with this person, I was always sharing about the shit.
Yeah, yeah. Well, do you think going through that has made you more positive then in the long run?
I think going through that made me realize that, number one, my friends can be really empathetic, and I so appreciate them for that. And I just wish they would have asked me a question like, it sounds like this is really hard. Why do you stay?
Okay. So it sounds like it was one of those where you sometimes it's harder to leave a situation that's pretty bad than go and step into the unknown. That can be the worst. I mean, when your life is awful, when everything sucks, and you have nothing to lose, it's so easy to just make a change. Just say fuck everything and just throw it all away and start over. That's actually pretty easy to do. Especially if you're as lucky as us and to be from a country where, like, well, we don't really have to worry about starving to death. You know, that's covered at least. And we've got air, we've got water, we've got food. That's really all you really, really need. Maybe some shelter.
Well, if you're a traveler, a passport too, maybe.
Yeah, passport would be good. Yeah. But even if you don't, I mean, even if it's not about traveling, even if it's just about, like, making some big change to your life, if everything is horrible, it's easy to make that change. If everything's, like, a little better than that, let's say, like, a 10 out of 100 instead of a 0, well, you step away and you might go down to a 0. And you never know. And so it's hard to make that leap. I can totally empathize with you for that. And I think a lot of people will stay in bad relationships longer than they should just because it's scary. It's being alone is scary. And it's a tough one to do.
Although I think the other thing that I came away thinking a lot about, though, is how much of the relationship was bad and how much was it me not being in the right mindset? Or how much of that is me not thinking about the other side of things? So I think when I came out of that, I wanted my friends to help, or my family to help me be more accountable to myself. I wanted them to ask me that tough question. Of course, acknowledge the way that I'm feeling and put the question back at me. Great, it's great that you're telling me all these things, but what are you really gonna do about it?
Yeah.
Because I think a lot of times we give the close people in our life a pass in these things. You know, how can we can talk to anybody? But it's so hard to talk to the people that we're closest to. And that's that question that I kept coming back to. Because if we can have these kinds of open, honest conversations with people on the road, how do we have more of those open, honest conversations with the people that we're closest to? So now that we can't have those, not acknowledging that they're not hard, just finding the way to make it work. And I think that was my quest. So after I came away from this writing, this reflection, all of this time, I started having these harder conversations with the closer people in my life.
You did, huh? How'd they go?
Some of the most amazing conversations of my life.
Really?
Huh. I mean, I spoke with my parents about things. I spoke with my sister. I spoke with this former lady friend of mine. I spoke with a person that I was doing business with about something that I wasn't feeling so comfortable with and no longer thought was the right situation for me to be in, and that we could decide on something else maybe. But the things that we had talked about before weren't quite what was starting to happen and where it looked like we were going. So maybe we should stop and reassess and see what the next thing to do would be.
Wow. Yeah, really, that's really admirable that you're able to do that.
And I'm 35 right now. Uh-huh. I was 30, 2014, 32. So as a 32-year-old, again, feeling like I was a very good, capable, competent communicator, yet I felt like that was the first time that I really, really went for it in some of these conversations. Because I found, you know, I would always want to save something emotional or something challenging, something hard for like the end of a conversation. Like, let's leave with that. Yeah. You know, whether it's like emotional or hard in a positive way, or emotional or hard in a hard or maybe not as positive way. And waiting and waiting and waiting. And I think what Bounce kind of has taught me to do, you know, as it's been like a tool for me, I think, to get better as a communicator, is, yeah, let me just tell you what I'm thinking right now. I think this conversation is over. Why is this even a problem?
Yeah.
You know, and that catches you off guard maybe a little bit. Or, you know, you feel like, oh no, but I think I should tell you everything else. And it's like, dude, you don't need to. Just what's actually the problem?
Yeah.
And if we, I think, were more open and honest and got to the point, maybe we have even better conversations.
Yeah, I fully agree.
Or more effective conversations, because it's not always about just having a good conversation, like us now being able to take this time and, you know, have a good conversation and explore, but more so, okay, let's explore a little bit, but how do we keep this exploration on track so we make sure we get somewhere after a certain period of time, so we continue along with our busy lives and do what we gotta do.
Sure, sure. And I think a lot of it is, it comes down to risk. Probably for me, probably for a lot of people. The least risky conversations are the ones with, you know, you sit down on a bench next to someone reading the newspaper and you just say, hi, you know, it's cloudy out or whatever. And then you move on. And if they say something weird to you or you say something like offensive to them, you're mad for a couple minutes, but whatever. It's just someone you just met. But you're not going to say the deepest things to someone close to you when there's risk involved. And I don't know. I think about it like this. Like if you're let's say you're a young single man and you wanna have a girlfriend, and you go to a bar and you see a pretty girl and you want to go up and talk to her, but it's hard. And why is it hard? Because it's so risky. Because she could reject you. And that's a really tough one to deal with. And I mean, I guess with her, you haven't met her yet, but that's, you're stepping into a much riskier thing. In a way that if you see someone that you're not attracted to, you could easily talk to them about the exact same stuff. And it probably goes, you know, now we're not dealing with the intimate relationships, we're just dealing with like personal relationships or business relationships. I think it's the same kind of thing. It's all about like someone that you know really well. It's hard to have those deeper conversations with them, because what if something goes wrong? You might like screw up their life, or they might screw up your life in a way that never would happen with someone you just met. And you know, now that I have said this, maybe I've just kind of thought of this. Something really awesome about travel, but also kind of bad about being on the road and traveling, is that you never really get to the risky conversations. You never go to, like, you don't run into your mom in you know, in the middle of nowhere in like Pakistan or something. Like you run into some guy sipping tea and sit down and have a chat with this dude with a 3-foot beard, you know. And so like I felt, I mean, I guess we haven't gotten into like our travels. I know you lived in China for a long time. I traveled, just spent years like just traveling. And I actually, toward the end, I was kind of getting a little frustrated because I kept meeting like awesome people, but only getting to know them for a day or two. And I just didn't have any like really close friends on the road. And that, it's just a tough thing to deal with. That, yeah, I've got close friends at home, but it's just not the same as having them be with me and experiencing whatever we're doing together.
That's a really interesting thought, this depth in relationship versus depth in conversation. And how you can feel like you have this deep relationship with someone, or at least you have deep ties, yet you can feel this deep connection and have this deep conversation with someone that you don't have either a deep relationship or deep ties with.
Yeah,
so I wonder, you know, how those conversations that you've had on the road could inform the conversation that you have with your mom. Like, what did you learn from conversation with Mr. 3-foot beard in Pakistan that you could apply to the next conversation that you have with your mom that might be hard?
Yeah, that's a good question. And for the record, I've never been to Pakistan and met a guy with a 3-foot beard. I just pulled that out of my ass.
Hopefully somewhere.
But yeah,
hopefully
someday.
Yeah. Because yeah. I think those guys exist.
Oh, yeah. I that's just how I picture it happening.
Yeah.
Right. And I don't know how to answer that offhand. Because the stuff that I talk about with people I've just met, I've just met them, so we're talking about superficial things, you know, and I don't feel the need to talk about that stuff with someone I'm really close to. I mean, even with even when I go home and travel, it used to be when I was much younger, I'd come, like the first time I came home from a long trip, I wanted to tell everyone about my trip. I wanted to talk about it constantly. And I'm sure all of us go through it, like people who have traveled a long time. And people kind of seemed like they wanted to listen for about 2 or 3 minutes. And then it's like, okay, you know, not, enough of that. You can just see the eyes glaze over and that's the end. And it's kind of like what you said, where it's, I don't blame them. It's just hard to focus that long. And especially since I was younger and I don't know, you could say more selfish, more self-centered, that I wanted validation from this, like, look at this cool thing I just did, you must validate me. Nowadays though, I expect it. I understand that that's gonna happen. Go home and I don't really want to talk about like I'll talk about like China for a little bit or wherever I've been for a while, but otherwise I want to talk about what they're up to, or just have a beer and talk about what's going on today. Mm-hmm. So it's the type of conversation I might have with that 3-foot beard dude in Pakistan is just so different from the type of conversation I might have with like my best friend from back home. It's mm-hmm. just hard to picture how those two would intersect. I'd almost have to draw it out on paper.
So how do they differ? What's the difference? So when you describe a good conversation or a great conversation, yeah. what would be your general definition for that? And how does that, what is similar or different about having it with 3-foot beard and your best friend from home?
Right. Well, with 3-foot beard, we've got such intense cultural differences that I almost just want to like hear, I need to know like how they view the world, their vision of it. And okay, I've never been to Pakistan, but I've lived in China for a long time. And some people in China, just if they've never left their province, let alone the whole country, they have just such a different view of what the world looks like and what society should look like than I do, that it's just really interesting to me to listen to that and get that broad overview of what they're up to. But if it's someone from home, I don't need to do that because we come from the same place. We know each other, or we know each other's culture, I should say. I know that, we both know that when it's a red light, you stop. I mean, and that might not be true of someone from another country. Mm-hmm. So we already have this foundation upon which to interact. So I think we can quite easily jump into like deeper stuff from there. Mm. So it's all about depth. Like the people that we meet who are very, very different from us, they're still human and they still see the same things that we see, but they have a different view of the world. And you know, it's important, I think, to acknowledge that and to do our best to understand where the other person's coming from. And so we're probably going to focus more on that high level overview a lot more than the in-depth stuff. It takes a lot longer to get to the in-depth stuff.
Hmm. Yeah, that's interesting. But I know you want to talk more about some travel stuff too. Hit me with some travel questions. What do you want to know?
What made you move to China, or what led to that? And what year was it, first of all, that you first came here?
Yep. Came to China in 2001 as a 19-year-old. First time that I'd been abroad.
Before September 11th?
Before September 11th. I was here over the summertime. I was between my first and second year of school. I studied Chinese. Had this amazing teacher. I went to school, I wanted to study international relations, I wanted to see the world, I wanted to meet the people, I wanted to hear about their stories, and because I'm from this small town in upstate New York. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to see, I think, more than I had been able to see as a kid, and that's why I wanted to do international relations, and because I'd been a French failure, I wanted to start a new language.
French language was your
French language
your thing?
Was my... bane of my existence is like the thing that comes to my mind first, but I was also a really bad science and math student. I just wasn't good at French.
Like French was too hard, so I decided to delve into Chinese.
I sucked it up in French. And I had particularly one amazing teacher, Madame Keegan, who just was so supportive of me and would see me for extra help and really try to help me. 2 years in a row, I was in her class, and you know, when I got to school, I was like, you know what? I think I want to start over. I want to start with a blank slate. Let's see if we can do this again. So, you know, I didn't pick any other romance languages because I figured if I messed up French, I'd probably mess up Spanish and any other related language.
Sure, yeah.
And so I saw, you know, Japanese, Chinese, and Swedish on the docket. And I was like, these are pretty interesting. And what I really liked about Swedish is that there was a husband and wife, one taught Scandinavian literature and one taught Swedish language. And I was like, that would be really cool. I think like when I grow up, I want to like work with my wife. Like, yeah, that would be like, awesome. I can like see that, because we had this really cool program where first year students would get to be, their advisor would be one of their first year teachers.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, so I think both of them, or at least one of them, was signed up for this program. And I was like, oh, that'd be cool. But then I ended up choosing Chinese. Thought it was kind of weird, and talking was like singing, and
yeah,
you know, writing was kind of like an art project. And yeah, I just thought that would be cool and interesting, and ended up having a teacher that changed my life.
Oh yeah, a Chinese teacher?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that was before you moved to China, though?
Yeah, so she basically was somebody that I was extremely intimidated by, and kind of scared me the first bit of class. And then as I realized I was doing worse and worse and worse, you know, I think my horrors of being a French failure were coming back to me. And so I asked her if I could just come in for extra help. But I was an athlete. I ran track in school. And so I couldn't come because her office hours were during practice. So she kind of she said, cool, come on. And yep. She saw me every Wednesday. And then the convincing sort of came in when a couple months later she was like, hey, you know, Jimai Ku, like, you know, your Chinese isn't really that good.
What's going on?
And these friends of mine are doing this this Chinese thing in Beijing over the summer. You know, maybe you should think about going. And I was like, yeah, you know, wow, sure, that's so interesting you say that. You know, China's pretty far away. I don't know if you knew that. And she's like, well, you know, college is pretty, you know, is going to be pretty hard if you suck at Chinese for the rest of your time here. So you probably don't want to waste your time. And I don't know, you might want to think about it. So my parents were extremely supportive of me. She was extremely supportive of me. And it turned out it was a pretty good idea because I came to Beijing for that summer of 2001. I had an incredible time. And it wasn't until I think went back that I had this big sort of culture shock, reverse culture shock.
Yep.
That, you know, kind of like you were mentioning, I wanted to share all about my experience. And most people were like, yeah, like, did you meet Chairman Mao? You
know? Right.
And I was like, uh-huh. Yeah, did they put you in jail? Like, did you get sick? Like, did they hurt you?
It's always the negative things for some reason.
And I'm like, you know, I went to a very liberal school. Mm. And for me, I'm thinking, like, why are people asking me these crazy questions? Like, I had a blast in China. I loved China. It was so interesting. People were so kind. People were willing to struggle through conversations with me where I felt like I couldn't really say anything. Or I found myself, you know, that summer, I just like throw out these random words that I was learning, or even like I'd ask people like, oh, 你最喜欢的成语, 是什么成语? You know, asking like what their favorite proverb was because I loved proverbs. Yet I never understood what they were saying. You know, and then I just like try to ask another question and struggle through that kind of thing. So I realized when I went back and I was getting all these crazy questions that I would graduate and I would come back to China after that and try to help Chinese people know more about America and Americans know more about China. Because I felt like there's this weird, you know, Chinese people knew about the America in the movies and, you know, the lives of famous celebrities and, you know, that every American has a gun. And I felt like Americans knew what they read in the news about China being a terrible place and, you know, the only things that were talked about are economics and the environment, and every place has its challenges. America has its challenges too. And I mean, if we can just find ways to better talk to each other.
Yeah, I think these two countries are highly misunderstood on both sides. I grew up in the Spanish world, or not grew up, but in high school I took Spanish. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of where I got my start. And I remember one of the first things I learned in Spanish class was that the U.S. and Mexico share a common border. Mm-hmm. And it might be hard to find a more extreme example anywhere in the world of two countries that have a border that understand each other less. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, wow. I mean, this is back in like, you know, 1994 or something. Mm-hmm. Maybe things have changed since then. But that really stuck with me.
And at the time, what did you think was the biggest misunderstandings between these two countries?
I think Americans tended to think of Mexico as like tacos and laborers and like, I don't know. It wasn't necessarily the danger at that time. Nowadays, I think you think of drug running and guns and stuff. And yeah, I mean, that started more recently, I think. It was there then, but not quite as bad. Mm-hmm. People, we kind of viewed Mexico as like just this really poor, like, shithole country, basically. And I don't know how they viewed us necessarily. They probably, well, like most countries, they viewed us through Hollywood and what they saw on TV, which may be a reality for a small handful of people in the country, but not for me, growing up in the Midwest. And but we got in this exchange program where 1 year we would go down to the school in Mexico for 2 weeks over Easter break and live with a family there. And then the next year they would come up and live with us. And it was awesome. I mean, this was before the internet, so like we didn't have, like, I think that's a big thing. We didn't have the internet. And I always, if I, you remember those times, but if I talk to someone who's like 10 years younger than me, they don't even remember that, like what it was like. For me, that was high school. There was no internet. And that really just changed the world in so many ways that it's opened up a lot of understandings. But all we could get really is just like reading the newspaper, or I mean, how do you even learn about Mexico? Like, pick up an encyclopedia? Like, what about current events? You know, you can turn on the TV and there might be a tiny blurb, but they're not going to show like fun stuff or good stuff. They're only going to show like the bad things, you know? So anyway, we did this exchange program and it really opened up my eyes to like what Mexico, at least that part of Mexico, really was, and like how nice the people were, and how, yeah, parts of Mexico City are dangerous, but parts of it are perfectly safe. And just seeing what it was really like, where I just remember being so blown away how every aspect of their lives seemed so different than anything I had ever experienced. And I guess that's what culture shock is. But it was in such a good way. I just felt pumped up. It just really got me going and wanted me to just learn more and more and more. So that was like an early experience that really shaped my life.
So what would be a good example of that sort of awesome cultural shocking thing for you?
The first time I went to Mexico, I remember the first thing I saw were Volkswagen bugs. And I don't know if that's still true or not, because I haven't been to Mexico City in 20 years, but more than that. At the time, literally 2/3 to 3/4 of the cars were the older Volkswagen bugs. And I'm like, why do they have all these? This is so weird, but so cool too. And suddenly I like really wanted one. I thought they were really awesome cars. And just the way that they drove, I mean, somebody told me that they drive crazy in Mexico. And that's, well, I had no frame of reference to know what that meant. There was no YouTube to look up crazy Mexican driving videos, nothing like that. So I just knew that they drove crazy. And then I got in a car once I was in Mexico and I was like, oh my God, we're gonna die. But it's so fun. Like, nobody buckles their seatbelts. Everyone drives twice as fast as they would at home. They swerve left and right. But it felt like I was in a video game. And those were a couple of the empowering kind of things, like for my like 15-year-old brain, you know, like the younger me that wasn't really aware that I'm a mortal being, that bad things could happen. But for sure, that stuff, and just I think just going out and hanging out in parks with the family that I was staying with, and getting to know like what their house looked like, and how they, I don't know, it's hard to even put into words how everything is just so different. Even like the everyday stuff that I wouldn't even normally think of as interesting, like what does their dining room look like? Do they have a tile floor or a carpet? And just seeing that stuff, I'm like, whoa, every little thing was like blowing me away. So if you've never like gone anywhere, you might think of travel as like, oh, let's go see the pyramids or something, or let's see the big stuff, the monuments, like let's go to China and see the Great Wall. For me, it's, yeah, that you should do that for sure. But the things that really stay with me, the experiences, are meeting local people and just seeing how they live their lives and just getting a better understanding for that. So Mexico was really what shaped that for me. And then, those were awesome times early in my life.
That's pretty cool.
And did you ever go to like France or any French speaking countries? Or,
you know, I haven't been to too many places outside of Asia. I did end up going to France. My sister, I have one sister. She ended up speaking, taking French and doing quite well at it. And she was accepted to school halfway into the first year. and I was given an opportunity to go to kind of start basically her college university time in France. So we ended up taking a family trip there, which was really cool. So I got to see that. That was cool.
Did you see the Eiffel Tower?
Saw the Eiffel Tower, yeah.
Just as I was getting at, yeah.
You know, I was a runner, so I got a chance to run around Paris, and that was really super cool for me.
Oh, that's cool. Okay.
And we were only in Paris for a day because she was living in Dijon, the land of mustard, and
right.
So and many other things. So got to really spend some time with her host family there, which was really special and very unique. So I really enjoyed that opportunity, I think. And I've since had a chance to go back and
sure. Oh, does she still live there?
She does not. No. She's back in the US, but, she spent a little bit of time there, and, I have a friend, a very good friend who's living there, and I got to go to her wedding. A couple of years ago, so okay. Yeah, that was really cool.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you: Do you do couch surfing at all?
I've slept on a lot of people's couches, and a lot of people have slept on my couch, but not officially.
Well, I would say you've done couch surfing; you just haven't done the .com version.
Yep.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, because I'm really into that, and I think I keep thinking about it with our conversation of where were you saying that you like. Finding deeper ways to meet people and interact, and I mean, we were kind of like touching on it before, but for me, it's just the best way to meet locals.
Mm-hmm.
Well, besides being invited over, I mean, I've also done a lot of unofficial couch surfing.
Mm-hmm.
I was in Australia a couple of years back, and several people invited me into their homes, and mm-hmm. that was just fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And which is awesome. I think a big part of it. I acknowledge a big part of it is because our cultures are so similar, and I can connect with people so easily in a country like Australia because we speak the same language. We have that initial understanding, the platform, and I think people in cultures that are very different from mine, they don't necessarily invite me into their homes so quickly.
Mm-hmm.
But then with a website that's kind of acting as that conduit, then
mm-hmm.
yeah, it can happen more.
Mm-hmm.
So to anyone listening, I'd highly recommend it. Just try it out. And I know Airbnb is another big popular one, and mm-hmm. I've never used it.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. Maybe I will someday.
Mm-hmm. I think there's a similar vibe with Airbnb. Of course, there's a financial transaction, you know, as opposed to just being completely free or open source in a way, I guess. But I think I've had some Airbnb experiences that were really, really lovely.
Now, did you get your own place, or did you stay in a place with somebody currently living there?
I have stayed in an Airbnb, and I have also been a Airbnb host.
Okay.
Because I think there's still that interest in being together with other people. There's that desire, I think, to connect. It seems like that's like one of the larger goals of something like Airbnb it's taking a concept like couch surfing, monetizing it, and turning it into something that for people who want to do that and maybe don't always have the financial means to do it, they can be compensated a little bit for that extra room that maybe they have. And, you know, that's cool too. And maybe that exposes more and more people to this kind of experience where they might not have before.
Yeah. That was my main hesitation for not using it. So you're kind of allaying my concerns a little bit. Like, I kind of think of it like this. Like, if I go to a hotel and stay in a hotel, I don't feel the need to talk to the receptionist or the owner and ask them to have dinner with me or cook dinner for them and, like, mm-hmm. ask them about their lives. It's mm-hmm. like, no. You know, I'll go to my room that I've paid for.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have to talk anymore once I give you my money.
Yeah.
And couch surfing is ideally not like that.
Mm-hmm.
Some people they have this kind of misconception of it, especially if they're new, like, oh, this guy's just going to give me a room for free and we don't have to interact. And, oh, no, I'll just stay out of your way. That's the other common one.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I just want to come over and I'll completely stay out of your way and not talk to you at all. And I'll mm-hmm. leave you alone. And
mm-hmm.
like, well, then you just don't get it.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what it's about.
Mm-hmm.
But if you think Airbnb can still have that kind of value of building up relationships and connections, because seriously, I've some of my best friends I've made on Couchsurfing. Mm-hmm. It's amazing how in touch it can put you with mm-hmm. somebody. If you think Airbnb can still keep that while also getting some money involved, mm-hmm. I think it's fine. Maybe I'd be willing to try it then.
Because I think there's a spectrum, like with everything. You know, there are the people who just, you know, they buy the extra apartment or they have the extra thing, and it's their business. You know,
right.
Airbnb becomes their business. And I think there are people like that too. And then I think there are also people that are more in sort of like the couch surfing band, who do it because, hey, this is great, a little bit, you know, pads my pocket a little bit every month or, you know, whatever, to have people come and stay. But at the same time, they want to have that experience of really sharing with people. So I think in every experience that I have had in hosting people through Airbnb, I'm always wanting to, you know, have them for a meal, you know, at least one if they would like to. Or if I'm doing something, you know, in the city that particular day, hey, I'm coming to this event, would you like to come with me? I think it's, you know, ever since coming back from the Linden Center, or having that experience at the Linden Center, where I think I spent a lot of time with people and I actually worked at a hotel, that's what I want my life to be more like. I want to experience more life with people. You know, I want to always have that extra room that a friend or a friend of a friend can come to and stay and expect, which I think is, I was doing this kind of a thing before I knew that Couchsurfing existed or Airbnb existed, just because I think the nature of who I am as a person. So I think because you're that's the nature of who you are as a person.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, do you have a spare bedroom here?
I don't now.
Ah, okay,
yeah.
You have.
I did for a while. Mm-hmm. But yeah, right now our apartment is full. So.
Oh, okay. Now that hostel that I stayed in Yunnan, mm-hmm. This kind of reminded me of it, that you listened to my podcast that I mm-hmm. talked about where I was there.
Yep.
That place was kind of like couch surfing to me. I mean, I was paying them, so it's kind of like what you were saying. I'm still giving them some money, mm-hmm. but it's just to keep their business open. And mm-hmm. I really got to know those people who are running it.
Horseman 46?
Yeah, Horseman 46.
Yeah.
And I did a podcast with two of the owners, Carol and Feifei, mm-hmm. and then a few of the other guests who were more long-term there. Mm-hmm. And that's really going to go down as a very memorable experience for me for mm-hmm. forever. Mm-hmm. So I guess putting money in doesn't necessarily like suddenly ruin it or something. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But I really do value those connections. Oh, one other thought I had is mm-hmm. it. Some things in our Western society especially just seem so backward, where the nicer the hotel you're in, the more money you spend, the more shut off you are from everybody. Mm-hmm. And even with homes, it's like that. Like, the richer you get, the more secluded your home is supposed to be. And if you're like a billionaire, you've got like these 10-foot walls around the whole thing and mm-hmm. giant yard, and no one can even look into your yard and see what you're up to. And if you're poor, you're just out in the street a lot, and you're constantly interacting with people. And for me, I mean, I do value some privacy. I do like to have my own bedroom, you know, mm-hmm. but I kind of need that interaction with people at the same time. So I kind of think, like, if I had infinite money or whatever, $1 billion, I wouldn't even want that giant mansion. I'd feel so lonely there, and I wouldn't want those 10-foot walls. I'd probably keep doing kind of what I'm doing now. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'd change very little about my life. And I mean, I'd maybe get an apartment like this and host people more often. But I mean, that might happen, mm-hmm. which can't really happen right now for financial reasons. But, you know, it seems kind of backwards how we do this, how mm-hmm. the nice hotel is the one where people just kiss your ass mm-hmm. and they don't. You know they don't care about you, and they know that you don't care about them, and just leave you alone.
Well, is that necessarily true, though?
Well, that's how I view it.
Yeah.
I guess I've never stayed in such a place.
Because, I mean, as you're sharing about this, I think the one thing that I think back to is just intention. So, you know, what is your intention? What do you want to do? How would you like this to be? What is the culture you want to create? And I think what I feel that I've been able to do with my house is, you know, I wasn't expecting that I was going to be coming back to China 2 years ago and staying longer. I was just feeling the energy. It just, something about it started to feel right. And maybe I should spend a little bit more time here. And
you thought that way when you were at home?
I thought that way when I came back, because I was expecting that I was only going to be here for a couple of weeks or a month or something like that to work on a project. And then I was likely going to, I was planning on going back to the U.S. And I'd been living in New Haven. I loved New Haven. I actually think of New Haven as like this really cool Beijing meets Shijiazhou, the village that I was living in Yunnan, and sort of all in one thing. And I could very much see myself moving back to New Haven someday and living there, just because I think it's so walkable and the people there are so nice and so friendly. And, you know, it's a very diverse community of people from all over, all different places, many different walks of life, doing different things, interested by the things that they're doing. There's, you know, higher education stuff that's there. There's just cool community organizations. It's just, it's got it all. From living there, I have very, very warm feelings about New Haven.
Oh, you're making me want to visit.
And so, you know, here I'm thinking of going back to New Haven. I'm like, you know, I actually got together with this friend of mine. She came over for brunch because I love to make food. I love to have people over. And she's like, you know, MCK, actually there's nothing necessarily pulling you back to America anymore. Like, there's nothing specifically you need to definitely go back for. Mm-hmm. Have you thought about staying? And so we'd been friends for quite a long time, and I had her over again for dinner a couple nights later, and I was like, you know, I really thought about what you said, and I think I will stay. And I found myself in a pretty challenging living situation in that following week. And the people that I was living with at the time, we were going to have a conversation about how this was all going to play out, and, you know, they're like, well, you know, you've been staying a little bit longer than you were thinking that you were going to stay, and I was like, yeah, you know, we should sit down. And all of a sudden, they didn't want to talk about it. So I was put in a situation where I was the only person living in the apartment, pretty big apartment, you know, pretty significant rent, and had to find a way to make it work. So I sat down and I wrote down what I thought was really important to me about that apartment and what the culture I wanted to create was like. Because I felt that in that time that I'd been there, I also wasn't able to fully feel like myself, because I felt like the other people that I was with were not maybe aligned with that kind of feeling either, of wanting to have people over, wanting to have more of this open, honest communication kind of stuff, which I was more starting out at that point, but very, very keen on. And I think there are people like Warren Buffett who have gotten to a point in their lives where they are very, very wealthy, but yet they still drive the same car, they still live in the same house, they still do what they've been doing.
Yeah, he's such an extreme example of that.
And I think there's a really funny quote about something like, yeah, but I do have a private jet because, you know, I mean, I have billions of dollars, so like, I need to have a private jet to get where I need to go. Yeah. Something like kind of funny like that. But that's the thing, like, do you want to create your own culture? Do you want to be a part of the life that you want to be living? How can you be living more in your own skin? Whether you're just communicating with someone, whether you're being, whether you're living, like, I don't know, how do you do more of that? And I think when I wrote that out, when I put those intentions out there, when I was trying to find other people to live with, and I was sharing this with the different people that I knew, it was a little bit long. It was a little bit specific. It had the things there that I thought were most important, and I think that's why I feel really lucky today to live with three awesome people who I couldn't have chosen better roommates.
Well, how did you find them then?
I think it just came. Like, it just
the universe provided?
I one of my roommates from last year, you know, that we had been living together, you know, for a bit over a year. You know, her boyfriend had moved in and become her husband. And they also were expanding their family. So I think they were ready to go.
Okay.
And just at that time, you know, one of my friends was leaving, and we had a little kind of going away, I'm not going away, see you next time, kind of a gathering at the place. And somebody who came was looking for somewhere to live, and they were going to be moving out soon.
There you go.
And then another friend of mine was feeling like they were in a bit of a pinch and didn't know about, you know, their future. And you know, knew that I had a spot to stay and, you know, asked me if that would be okay. And it's been great. It's rotated a bit of it. So, like, you know, from the very beginning, sometimes it felt like a little bit of a revolving door, and at some points it was a little bit stressful because for most of the time when the, you know, there weren't enough people there, I mean, I had to...
Oh, you have to put in all the money then. Okay.
I had to put in all the cash.
So that's where Airbnb came in?
So that was where Airbnb had come in, yeah. And so that was helpful. You know, our last roommate, you know, had just, you know, wrote to me and, you know, had heard that I might have another space, and, you know, now here we are, the four of us. So I think sometimes when you just put it out there, you get really lucky.
Yeah.
And I guess there's no really other way, I think, for me to describe it. It's maybe the universe does provide, or in the moments that are, you know, certain things are really important, if you've put in enough effort and you put in the work and you care enough, that not everything is going to work out perfectly, but at least you can get to that next step.
Sure. Somehow things seem to always work out one way or another.
Yeah.
One thing I'm like really amazed by living here is how transient the living situation is. Mm-hmm. I mean, when we were looking for this apartment or an apartment 2 years ago, mm-hmm. It was my roommate, my wife was down and out for the count. She tore her Achilles tendon, and she was wearing this giant cast. So she stayed home, and my friend and I went and looked for an apartment. And at one point, I guess this is before she tore her Achilles tendon, it doesn't matter. At one point, we were looking for apartments, and an agent showed us a few places. And we said, oh yeah, this place looks pretty cool. And the guy said, well, so when do you want to move in? And we said, about 2 months from now. And he said, what? How? Get out of here. Why are you here? You're wasting my time. You come back when it's 2 days. We're like, wait, what? Really? He's like, yeah, no one moves in 2 months or figures that out 2 months earlier. Wow. Okay. So then we found this place, and it was like, yeah, we want to move in 2 days. And that was a really scary leap for us to take because we knew we had to move out of our old place because mm-hmm. that was a campus apartment, and we couldn't stay there anymore. We had a set date to move out. And we had to have somewhere to go, and we had plane tickets out of the country, and like we really had to get all this stuff sorted out. So if there was a very small window, or if we didn't make that window, we were just screwed. Mm-hmm. But it all worked out somehow. Mm-hmm. And actually there were several places with openings with like zero advance warning. Mm-hmm. So there's that side of it. And that's kind of the good side. If you need a place, mm-hmm. you can find one very quickly here. Mm-hmm. The downside is if you have a place, sometimes you get kicked out unexpectedly. And that just happened to a couple of my friends. They were told they had to leave their apartment tomorrow. At the time. Wow. They said some of the hutongs are getting torn down. Mm-hmm. Or it's some weird story where like they want them all to look the same somehow. Mm-hmm. Anyway, the gist of it is they got a call and said, well, sorry guys, you got to leave your apartment tomorrow.
Yeah.
Which, God, that's just horrible, and that would never happen in the U.S. But they dealt with it, and mm-hmm. luckily for them, it sounds like they were able to find a place right away, because mm-hmm. that's just how things are here, this lack of planning. Mm-hmm. It's actually like, you know, if you think about culture shock and with moving to different societies. I talked a little bit about Mexico, and mm-hmm. I'm kind of used to a lot of things. Like, just I kind of expected a lot of things to be different here because it's China. It's not the U.S. It's not going to be the same. And I kind of knew a little bit about this culture before I came here. One thing I had no idea about was how little people plan ahead mm-hmm. here. And they maybe you could make an argument that they do plan pretty well for like 20 years from now or 30 years from now, mm-hmm. but people just don't seem to plan for like a week from now or a month from now. Mm-hmm. It's either right now or mm-hmm. the far future, but nothing in between. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of something culture shock related mm-hmm. that kind of came upon me over a long time. I guess I'm wondering if you've been affected kind of in similar ways, or do you have other things that, well, I guess it's been 16 years since you first moved here, but can you remember when you first came here, what kind of things really affected you that were so different than at home?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so 16 years old on my first trip, my first visit.
Yeah.
I moved in 2004. I was here 2004, 2011, moved to Yunnan. Not expecting to move to Yunnan, going to Yunnan, but ended up spending a lot of time there. And then was back in the U.S. between 13 and 15, and then here since 2015, pretty full time. I was more shocked going back.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. I wasn't that shocked coming here.
So your first time going home, you were most?
Yeah. I didn't feel a lot of culture shock coming to China in 2001. I didn't know how to order anything, so it's sort of, I had jajangmyeon every single day, and I can no longer eat that.
I remember the early days when I did a lot of pointing and praying, because a lot of the menus are only written in Chinese. So.
Yep, that was something. Something with the traffic. I used to think that people drive really crazy here, and now I just realize it's just a different rhythm.
Yeah, I totally agree. Yep.
So I don't really think about that as crazy, and I think, in fact, I like it more. Because I think, and maybe this relates to time too. Like, I think Chinese people in general are very good at thinking about these bigger pictures. Like, here's the 5-year plan. Here is the longer term plans.
Yes.
And okay, so maybe, there's not a lot of planning for next week or next month or these kinds of things. And things come up. Yeah. I think a lot of people in America, I've noticed more China happening in America in terms of timing rather than less.
Oh, how so?
I think people are planning a little bit less in advance. I think people are a little bit more flexible than they used to be. I think there's a little bit of, acceptable, I'm not going to plan, so far in advance. I mean, that is also happening. Like, I think a friend of mine who's moved back to America, and it's like, man, I just kind of, maybe not like to know what I'm doing this weekend and be able to decide on Friday and it'd be okay and I can do it on Saturday.
Yeah.
Whereas this place that she was living, she's like, people are planning a month or two or three in advance. So my weekends are all planned, through the entire summer now.
Yeah.
And it's like,
it's a double-edged sword for sure.
It is a double-edged sword. So I like the pace of the way that cars move, and I mean, of course now there's a lot more cars, I think, than there used to be. And
was it mostly bicycles when you moved here?
Not that there was mostly bicycles, just less cars.
Huh.
As in, when you're going down the road and, there's the bike lane and there's a lot of cars in the bike lane.
It's like the bikes and everything else lane.
There are less of those. Just fixtures of cars being there, I think. And I think, the Hutongs are a little less crowded in terms of vehicles and stuff. So there's more of those now, and it makes sense. I think I learned at an event yesterday, I think there are 27 million cars made. Ooh, what's the period of time? A day, a week, a month, a year?
I read one interesting one, not the same one as you, but there were, I think it was 30, in the mid-80s, there were 30,000, if I remember right, privately owned cars in all of China.
Yeah.
And now there's over 100 million in 30 years.
There's a lot.
Yeah.
But switching gears, I brought something special. So, speaking of Airbnb, so I told you before that I was living in Yunnan, and I was living in this village called Xizhou. And the people across the street from the hotel, do you like sour things?
Yeah, sure.
So the people that were living across the street from this hotel were also my colleagues, which is really cool, right? So my colleagues are local villagers, various ages, people from all over China, different places in China, and then, a foreigner or a couple of foreigners. And such a cool mix of people, to be there. So anyways, these people who are living across the street, that's where we had our lunch.
Okay.
Our staff, all of our staff meals. And it was just so great. I loved the food. I loved the atmosphere. And this particular woman was just so cool. So her daughter worked at Linden Center for a little bit, and her husband had a different job, but then she was basically opening up her house to be like the staff kitchen, and then also was one of the cooks. And she made these soy mugwa, sour papaya.
Okay. And sour papaya. That's
just like the most delicious thing. So it's different from a regular papaya. Like regular papaya is this, you know, big orangey sort of thing.
Yep.
Pretty sweet. These guys are like, if you ever have like a Thai salad or something like that, where there's like papaya salad, and okay, you notice it's like a little sour, and like, why is that?
Yeah. And it's from this. So this is a dried fruit.
So it's a dried fruit.
It almost looks like cheese, but it's, you taste it, and it tastes like a lighter version of a Sour Patch Kid.
Yep. And yeah, so basically, you know, you use either white sugar or brown sugar. You use the sugar to dry it, of which it also comes out this like super, super sour concentrate liquid. And yeah, because the sun in Dali is really great, you know, so you just put it out there to dry. Put a little bit of this zishu, which is a purple mint. And yeah.
Yeah, it's good. It's a nice, refreshing snack.
So just, yeah, one of my favorite things. So I wanted to share with you.
Cool, thank you. I'll have to get a picture of that and put it up on the website so people can actually see it.
Oh, yeah, okay.
But when I was in Shashi, I noticed a lot of these, I don't even know what to call them, these things were fruit dries.
Mm-hmm.
Like some canvas maybe that's spread out, and then they put little pieces of fruit all over it and dry it in the sun all day. Mm-hmm. And I'm guessing that's how they make these.
Basket, but same thing.
Same type of thing.
Just like one of these large baskets that they would put down. Like you would do tea.
Sure.
That's actually, I mean, that's how you dry tea. So, I mean, I know that you're enjoy biking, sometimes have tumultuous relationships with biking based on your... what was that, episode number 32? Or
ooh, one of them. Wow.
The armor.
You're in tune to it.
Well, I really enjoyed that episode, I think. Well, number one, I think it's cool, like, you put everybody's name down, but I love that question. I mean, you know that I love questions by this point, but I love that question that you put out there of, like, you know, what do you call armor when it doesn't work for you or whatever? Mm-hmm. And I think that's what attracted me. You know, so when you're asking me before, like, what'd you listen to? It's like, well, yeah, I want to know more about your show. I want to know how I can be a good participant and maybe get a little bit of the vibe and the feel and, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Absolutely.
And that was I listened to that one first because I was like, well, first of all, it's more of a monologue, so maybe I know more about you. Second, great question. So that kind of caught my eye and attracted me. and then third, you know, because I really enjoy biking as well. And I've run these biking trips in Yunnan. So I was attracted to like thinking about how that might have gone for you and what it was like for you and, you know, what I might learn, you know, from you too. But tea is like, I through this biking stuff, I've learned a lot about tea. And so tea is also dried in a lot of these like larger sort of basket-y type things.
Got it, okay. That's cool. I mean, I've traveled in Colombia too, and I've seen coffee beans out drying and similar type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's interesting how that works.
Totally.
Like stuff we just don't think about at home. It's just, oh, there's coffee. Like, it's just ground up. And I didn't know the berries were red when they're on the bush.
Mm-hmm.
And same with tea. Like, before moving to China, I thought, I didn't know what tea was. I didn't realize there was just one tea tree. I thought all tea came from a different type of plant.
Mm-hmm.
But no, it's all the same.
I mean, because apple cinnamon tea and chrysanthemum tea and
That stuff, yeah.
But I mean, yeah, I think it's funny when you... You know, because you're right, because there is this one, you know, there's one tea tree. You know, this is like how it does. And it's just based on the process of how you do it that, you know, creates all these different sort of flavors or these different types of teas. Whereas I think, you know, when I was growing up, you know, drinking apple cinnamon or Lipton,
yeah.
You know, those were very different, very, very different conception of the way that a lot of people, you know, people that are in these villages, like, they would never drink that stuff.
Yeah,
you know?
They wouldn't even call it tea.
They wouldn't even call it tea. They're right. Just like, oh, you mean like the dust on the ground that they put in those packages and sell to you guys? You know,
yeah. That's tea. Oh,
that's not the tea that we'd be drinking.
And actually, when I was in Yunnan, we were talking about tea a little bit. I think we were drinking Pu'er tea with some of the people at the hostel. Mm-hmm. And I asked the question, what is the difference between red tea and black tea? Mm-hmm. And we couldn't quite figure it out. Mm-hmm. And then I realized, oh, in Chinese, there is no black tea. There's just red tea. And in English, there's no red tea. There's just black tea. We call it black and they call it red. Mm-hmm. And it's the same thing. Mm-hmm. And I said, how could we both look at the same thing and use such different words for it? Mm-hmm. And then I poured a cup and I'm like, oh yeah, when you pour it, it actually, if you look at like a clear glass, at least it is red. Mm. And when it's dry, the tea leaves, they're black. Mm. And so we're basing it on when they're dry and they're basing it on when they're red. Mm. And I don't know, it's just a silly little realization, but it's almost like this metaphor for understanding our cultural differences. Like we're such different people that we can see the same thing and call it something different, but we're both right. Mm-hmm. Neither of us is wrong. Mm-hmm. We just have a different way of looking at it. Mm-hmm. And that's what travel kind of does. It helps you see the other way of looking at it.
It's a really thoughtful way of thinking about it. Because I'll tell you, as much as I've thought about tea and drunk tea and known this difference between these two things, I've never thought about it like that before. Hmm.
Like black versus red?
Yeah. Because, I mean, from a technical point of view, black tea is actually pu'er tea.
Oh, so I still didn't understand it. Okay.
Well, no. I mean, I think you've understood it really well. Yeah. Like, I really like what you just said. Mm. And I think that is true. Because, you know, what Chinese people call red tea is what English-speaking people will call black tea. That is absolutely true. And it's just when you get into these extra, like, tea snob distinctions, you know, when you have like yellow tea and white tea and, you know, all these different types of teas. Yeah. I believe that pu'er tea is under the black tea. So you would call it hei cha.
Oh, you would call it that.
Okay. As in, like, it would be under that sort of distinction.
Yeah.
But the average person, when we're just talking about tea, like, yes, red tea and black tea is hong cha and black tea is the same thing.
Yeah.
So yeah, because I like that. And again, as you're saying, when you talk to people that are different than you, when you talk to people who have seen different things as you see or see the same thing that you see differently, like, that is great. So now I can think, I mean, now I have that, like, in my library of thoughts, thanks to you.
Oh, well, yeah. No problem. I don't know how that came out, but every now and then I have a nugget.
Mm-hmm. Well, just, I mean, tea is super cool. And, you know, I originally went down to Sichuan Bana. Just, you know, because a couple friends and I, actually the guy that convinced me to go and do this thing in Yunnan, we went on this, we wanted to start something where we could do something with eco-adventure travel, experiential education, and charity, and see how those could, like, combine together. And the two of them were going to do this rickshaw ride in India, if you've ever heard of that, where you go from top to bottom or bottom to top.
I've read about two specific people who did it. Is that a normal thing?
I think they do it maybe every year.
Oh, it's like a bunch of people get together and do it?
Something like that. Okay. I think it's like an actual race where people are like...
That sounds awesome.
I think so. And so, you know, these two friends of mine, they wanted to do it. And then all of a sudden, they're like, wait a second, like... There's all these, like, unexplored parts of China that we haven't done. Why don't we do that? And why don't we also be a little more eco-friendly about it and, like, take a bike as opposed to, like,
yeah,
a rickshaw?
Yeah.
And, you know, so they asked me to join, you know, and, you know, this thing we ended up calling it the China Charity Challenge, and it was cool. And we're going to do it before the Olympics, but then we got kind of busy, and then we did it afterwards. And it ended up opening me up to this place in southern Yunnan, and more of Yunnan, because Yunnan was always my favorite food. My favorite Chinese food is Yunnan Cai.
Yeah, I think me too.
And, you know, I'd explored a little bit. I had been to some of these places before. And here I was like, ooh, I get to go to a new place.
Sichuan Bana.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm learning about the interesting parts of the cultures of all of the different people there. And, you know, the interesting social challenges of, you know, what it's like to be primarily agricultural. And then you have banana and rubber and xiangjiao versus xiangjiao. So, like, going through this, like, but that doesn't sound like a banana. What would that be? Oh, it's rubber. And how rubber, you know, came during a period of time where Mao was, you know, thinking rubber was a really good idea. And, you know, a lot of people moved from Hunan also to help, you know, kind of build up rubber plantations, you know, in this particular area.
Okay.
And, you know, learning about this and then also learning about tea and, you know, tea being such an important part of Chinese culture and, you know, feeling like I didn't know so much about it and thinking like, oh, this would be a really cool way to do that. So I learned about all this amazing and cool stuff. And just further my love for Yunnan. You know, we ended up doing this, 8 or 9 day bike ride, which now continues to run. And I think, you know, I really connected with what you were saying about being on a bike and the types of things that you can know or understand because you're just going a little bit slower.
Yeah. Yeah.
And because, like you were saying, I think in that episode, you know, you can travel a little bit more ground, but you can do it in a way where you can see stuff. So walking for sure is a great way to do and to like really, really zoom in. But then the bike is maybe that one or two layers outwards.
Yeah.
Where again, you know, here, you know, this buddy Mark and I, as we're going and we're researching this ride, I mean, basically we just showed up, rented a couple of bikes and just started asking people like, what would be a good way to go?
Sure.
And then found our sort of way initially as a result of those conversations. And I think it's those conversations we had with the, you know, random lady, you know, that lived on this bridge that offered us tea, you know, or, you know, this person that was working in a hotel pouring tea for everybody who was coming through from Hong Kong or southern China and wanting to know what the latest pu'er was tasting like. And what that spring tea was like, and the difference between spring tea and fall tea, and like all these like really cool things, because those are the two most important seasons of the year, and how people think about, you know, why the spring tea is better because it's had this more hibernation period that, you know, and nobody really wants to drink the summer tea because that's just like a bad idea, you know, and you know, just like these things, yeah. From tea culture that maybe I never would have had access to if I hadn't done something like that. So I think, again, that's something that I really enjoy and appreciate and respect, I think, about you, is, like, you're talking about this idea of going on this year-long, you're going to travel for a year when you leave.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, you did, like, whatever, 987 days? Or, I don't know, you...
In, like, South America? Yeah, something like that.
Like, that is incredible, you know? And yeah. To go... I mean, dude, that's, like, 2.5 years.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, you could really... delve deep into a culture when you go for that long. I think I stayed in most of the big countries 3 months in each country.
Mm-hmm.
Which China, I mean, so huge. I could travel for years just in China.
Yeah,
absolutely. And speaking about Sichuan Banan, Katie and I actually thought about going there.
Mm-hmm.
From Rayleigh. We could go one of two ways.
Mm-hmm.
We could go that way, or we could go the, or if not from, we ended up going to Rayleigh.
Mm-hmm.
We thought about going to Sichuan Banan, but mm-hmm. now we're thinking of going there in the future because it sounds so cool.
Definitely worth the trip.
And that's right on the border with Myanmar?
Mm-hmm. Very close.
Yep. Yeah.
In certain points, it's very close.
Okay. So we might somehow figure out a way to... I have to ask this, though. Is the border open for foreigners? Or do you know that?
I'm not sure.
The border in Rayleigh was definitely open.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think foreigners were allowed to go across there. Someone told me this. Now, this is one of those weird things where
mm-hmm.
the situation there is always changing, the rules change frequently, and
mm-hmm.
it's really hard to get good info online because it's going to be outdated.
Mm-hmm.
And even people you meet on the road, they might not quite know what they're talking about,
mm-hmm.
Especially when there's different rules for if you're Chinese or if you're not.
Yeah.
But anyway, we might try to go into Myanmar overland. I'm not quite sure yet.
Mm-hmm.
But...
Cool.
But I do, like, right behind you is one of the fold-up bikes in
mm-hmm.
this place. And
is this the one with the that is working or not working?
Well, they're both working now.
Okay.
I'm happy to report that we came back here and went to the official Dahong shop, and they were able to supply us with a new chain that is actually the proper chain.
Cool.
And mm-hmm. now they're both in really good condition.
Mm-hmm.
And so now we're thinking, at least I'm thinking, that, God, this trip just... didn't work out so well, so mm-hmm. maybe we can still make good use of these bikes. So
mm-hmm.
one idea that I'm really exploring and liking now is going mm-hmm. to South Korea,
okay.
Japan, and Taiwan,
mm-hmm.
and biking around those three countries. And
cool.
maybe coming back to China and selling the bikes or something. But
mm-hmm.
there's just so much to see out there. And
It's true, there is so much to see.
It's one of those things, like a year, if you've never traveled for a year sounds like a long time to travel. Like, wow, you could just see the whole world in a year. And like, nah, you can't even see, like I said, you can't even see China in a year. Mm-hmm. Not possible. If you want to get some perspective, like think of if you're American, could you see your whole state in a month? Would that be possible? Probably.
That's an interesting question. Yeah.
I think Wisconsin, where I'm from, a month would be about right. Like you wouldn't see every town in a month, but you know, you'd get to see the big major spots. Mm-hmm. You'd get to explore the most important parts.
And how would you want to see it, or who would you want to stay with?
It's a broad question.
Yeah.
But you know, for me anyway, if I had never been to Wisconsin, I could probably go to Wisconsin for a month, travel around, and not feel like I had to return, like not feel like I missed out on something big. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of a medium-sized state. So let's say this, there's some states where a week would be enough. Like, I don't know, Rhode Island, maybe a week is enough.
Yeah.
Maybe not, I don't know. But then there's other states like California, you could spend several months there. But let's say maybe just for the sake of discussion, it all rounds out and it becomes a month in each state. Mm-hmm. Well, there's 50 states, that's 4 years. You know, and
it's true,
and that's just one country.
Yeah.
And you could spend 4 years then just using that little formula just in the United States. Mm-hmm. And then you think of all the other countries out there in the world and how many places there are, and it's daunting. It's a lifetime.
Well, it's like your friend in episode one,
who, Greg, yeah,
you know, endeavors to spend 3 years on all of these. I mean, that's
his plan.
That's incredible.
He's an ambitious guy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I still, to this day, I'm not sure how he was able to come up with that plan when he was like, I think he was like 16 or something.
Mm-hmm.
And he decided he was going to spend 3 years on each continent. Like, how do you even do that? How do you decide that when you're that young, you know?
I think some people just know.
And follow through on it. Yeah, I guess some people know.
Maybe like guys like you and I don't always... Maybe we're planning more a little bit shorter term.
right. What we were talking about before. Yeah, I'm. The planning thing. It'd be cool if we could have a happy medium between like the obsessive planning of our culture and the absolute lack of planning at times of Chinese culture.
Mm-hmm. Well, but again, I mean, I think I would see that from a slightly different angle. What's the right plan for you?
Right, everyone's different. That's true.
Because I think ultimately it does come down to that. And I have learned so much, I think, from living in China, interacting with Chinese people, and also interacting with all the, you know, foreign friends that I've met. And I think it's just helped me to better understand what's important to me. Because you're continually faced with these things. When you live in a foreign place that, you know, is this me, is this not me? And when certain things, I think, become a part of you, then when you go to the next foreign place, sometimes, which is your original home, then you think, well, is this me or is this not me?
Yeah.
And it's always that, I think it's that almost whittling down process or narrowing down to, okay, what elements are really, really important for me to keep and which aren't? And yeah, I think I know for the planning, I think I'm very good tactile, like what's right in front of me. And I think I'm very good at the vision. Like I know what I really, really want to do.
Yeah.
At least now I do. But it's that middle that, you know, I think is a little bit tougher for me. And I think there are those three sort of horizons. I did this really cool leadership program a couple of years ago. And, you know, we did this exercise where we're standing, you know, who's good and tactile in the moment. Who's good, you know, a few years down the line, who's good at, you know, 10 years and beyond.
Yeah.
And I find myself with that struggle between the really good in the moment and really good with 10 years beyond. But then in the middle, I feel a little bit lost.
Huh.
And I think that's why you want to surround yourself with people who, you know, fill in those holes for you.
Sure. But is that what China has done for you? Because it sounds like you have a similar mindset to a lot of Chinese folks.
I think China's helped me to realize those parts of myself. Like a really small example, I don't like cold beverages.
Ah, right.
China's helped me to know that that's okay.
You'd never liked even before
no,
you came here?
Never liked them. Nope.
Okay. Room temperature's okay, but
soda, always drank room temperature. Just never liked ice in my beverages. Mm. And I think coming to here, I learned to drink hot things, which was a little weird for me at the beginning. But now I like it. And I will drink either room temperature or I'll drink hot.
Yeah, we should explain for people listening, like, who've never been to China. Mm-hmm. I just had a cup. Well, my in-laws came, my mm-hmm. wife's parents. Mm-hmm. Came to visit, and then right after that I had a couple of friends here visiting, and mm-hmm. both of them were a little surprised by this, that they don't really have cold beverages here, mm-hmm. Especially not water. Mm-hmm. Maybe beer you could get cold, but Chinese people don't ever drink cold water, mm-hmm. and they drink it boiled or at least room temperature, and usually warm or hot, even at a restaurant. Mm-hmm. And they found that very weird, mm-hmm. and I suppose I did too if I think about it, and now it just seems totally normal to me. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's kind of changed my outlook too. Like I actually do like cold beverages, but mm-hmm. I'm okay with hot beverages too now. Mm-hmm. You know, and the hot drinking hot water is totally fine with me. Mm-hmm. So it's helped me become a more flexible person. Mm-hmm. And travel has, and I like this idea of moving in and out of cultures, and with each new culture that I go to, I have a little bit less of that initial shock. There's things that have built up on me over time with China, mm-hmm. but day one here, I was just like, yep, cool, we're in China, okay, first mm-hmm. day in Asia. Mm-hmm. And in a way that just didn't happen when I went to like Mexico for the first time, where I was just mm-hmm. on this adrenaline rush for the whole time there. Mm-hmm. So travel has really helped, it helped me just adjust and quickly move in and out of different scenarios. Mm-hmm. And even going home helps that too. Like the first time I went home, I experienced what you've talked about and what I've talked about a little bit, that reverse culture shock. It's mm-hmm. realizing that the country that you're from is identical to where you left it, but you're a different person. And that's something you don't necessarily see when you're traveling because you're just experiencing life day to day. Mm-hmm. It's almost like if you have a friend who's really heavy and then they lose a bunch of weight mm-hmm. and you haven't seen them in a year, and then you see them and you're like, whoa, who is that? And it's a giant shocking change for you to see this person. Yet if you live with them, or if you are very close friends with them and you see them all the time, mm-hmm. the day-to-day difference, you might not even notice.
That's really interesting.
Right? And so like you can go away for 3 years or whatever it is, 1 year even, mm-hmm. change just slowly. Change happens slowly within you, and you might not notice it on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. But that day you come home, I guarantee it's going to shock you if you've never done it before. Mm-hmm. Not you, but mm-hmm. someone.
Yeah.
But I will say that each time I go home, the shock is a little less and less, and I'm almost to the point where I can just jump back and forth now. Mm-hmm. Even if I've gone out for a year,
yeah,
I can just come home and go, oh yeah, okay, cool, here we are. Because. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I feel that way too, I think.
Yeah, do you? Yeah.
I think, you know, that's, you know, when you practice, when you do things enough, mm-hmm. you know, you have that chance to be more fluent in whatever that is. And sometimes that's a language, and I think we think about fluency in language a lot, and we think less about fluency in the way that we live. And I think that's kind of maybe the fluency that I've been able to achieve, and maybe it sounds like you've been able to achieve too, of being here or being there, and being in this home or being in that home, and being in that home that's on the road, which you may be in just for a short period of time.
Yeah. So what's that Metallica quote like? Anywhere I roam, wherever I lay my head is home.
That's a pretty good one.
Yeah.
So what's the last question you want to ask me?
The last question I want to ask you is, I looked at your website quite a bit before you came over. Mm-hmm. I watched your videos. Mm-hmm. And in every single one of those videos, you have a pen in your left ear. And then I was wondering, is he going to have a pen in his ear when he comes over? And indeed, you have one.
Mm-hmm.
Is this a regular habit for you? Is there a reason for it?
Yeah. I mean, I think the joke that I usually tell people is, you know, I'm just waiting for you to say something amazing so I can write it down. Because I always have a notebook as well with me. And I just, yeah, I started doing it in college, I guess. I was always worried about losing it. So I felt like if I put it in my ear, I always knew it was there.
Well, makes sense.
And yeah, I kind of just kept the habit. And in you know, in Beijing days, I mean, when I wasn't wearing a helmet, I'd even like I just keep it in my ear when I was like on my bike or
anytime.
It just feels like really comfortable now, actually, like a shirt or a,
your
you
image.
Know, like the nice pair of jeans that you know you really break in.
It's like your Gucci sunglasses.
I don't know. Gucci sunglasses, maybe. I don't know if those conform to your ear as well. But I will tell you, it doesn't feel as comfortable if I put it in the right.
Oh, you're left-eared.
Yeah, I'm left-eared. Yeah. So I feel like if I put it on the right side, I don't know if it's going to... I don't have the same kind of confidence that's going to stay. But if I put it in the left side, I'm, like, definitely there. Huh. So it's, like, no big deal.
Huh. I wonder if your body is conforming to the pen or if the pen is conforming to your body.
Huh. Or if it was just always meant to be. It's hard.
Maybe you're just born with a notch in your skull.
It's hard to know.
You were meant to be.
Yeah.
All right, so it sounds like we've got a hard out here. You got people to meet, things to do.
No, we just got to bounce. So
yeah, you got to bounce. We're all bouncing in this world, but it's been an awesome discussion.
And I just appreciate the serendipity of this whole process. Appreciate Nina for suggesting that we should have a chat and that we'd enjoy each other.
All right, shout out to Nina.
So yeah, shout out to Nina. And thank you for opening this space and opening your home to, you know, make conversations like this happen in the world.
It's completely my pleasure. Thanks for listening to this podcast, and thanks to MCK for coming on. That was an awesome show, and I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. MCK's website is mck123.com. And my own website is 1000daysbetween.com. That's the number 1000daysbetween.com. You can go to either of these websites to get more information about us and what we're up to. Again, thanks for listening, and I'll catch you next time.